This is State of the Union, the District Council 37 radio show on 91.5 WNYE FM. I'm Chris Policano. DC 37 is the city's largest union of city workers. We're part of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, also known as AFSCME. Tonight we are joined by DC 37 Executive Director Henry Garrido. Henry, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Good to be here.
It's this is the first time you've been on in a while, and the world has changed in many ways. Donald Trump is showing us what his agenda looks like. The Republicans in state houses across the country and in Washington are setting an agenda, and it looks like we've got a lot of work to do.
Indeed, and I can't say that I'm surprised. I think we all, and those of us who, you know, have seen his body of work over the years, expected no less from what he's done. He's made an agenda from day one that attacked working people, that reshift the whole argument to benefit those who are at the top 1%. Of the economic ladder, and has really run a whole campaign of anti-government, but the same talking, complaining about why he's not liked and what reasons is he can't perform what he has promised he would do. You know, it's been chaotic to say the least, but it's also be moving in the wrong direction.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, he campaigned on blowing up government, and we believe in government, and we believe in government services, and there really is a fight now for the heart and soul and the ideology of the country, isn't there? I mean, this
indeed,
is,
and I think that in addition, one of the things he was able to do during the presidential election is tap into this collective anger of people about a rigged system. A rigged system that talked about, we've talked about for years, and the system talks about, how the rich continue to make up more and more. Maybe somebody who was on the inside, maybe he had an inside track, and he said to people, African American specials, what do you have to lose, right? The system is, is rigged, and we all saw it, not just with his campaign, but we saw it with Bernie Sanders' campaign. This populism, or this populist message that basically essentially said, we need to have a whole redo in Washington. We need to drain the swamp. We need to get rid of all our policies. We need to be getting away from being politically correct and do things. And he has certainly done things, and he is not certainly worried about being politically correct. But unfortunately, the very things that he's proposing to do, they seem to be contrary to the very thing he's supposed to be fixing in the first place. Because while he talked about undoing an Obama care and doing the Affordable Health Care Act and doing it better and proposing a better system that's going to save us money, he has proposed, and his Republican friends in Congress have proposed sort of the opposite, and so bad when even the conservative groups are criticizing this plan for what it does and what it doesn't do. And let's be clear and be honest, what it does do is it proposes a tax break for millionaires. It takes away some of the very key factors that the ACA was putting in place to control cost. It withdraws money from a pool that pays for the uninsured and the underinsured. It shifts the burden and the responsibility to the individual. the proposal has this tax savings account, which would hurt, in our opinion, the poor. And based on the analysis we've seen, millions of people will be losing health insurance as a result of this proposal. So it's doing the opposite of what he promised he would do. And there's something perverse about this, because we finally begin to see the number of sick people declining in the country. We saw the number of uninsured decline, the quality of care going up. You know, and look, you know, I'm not suggesting the ACA was perfect. There are issues there, you know, that we ourselves as a union were pushing to change. You know, I think that the controlling, you know, what's happening with prescription drugs across this country is just, it's unconscionable, right? You know, the rise of the prices is threatening to bankrupt the healthcare system, and the ACA did not, in our opinion, do enough to curtail the price of, you know, the pharma and the prescription industry. And so we saw that there was movement for change, but the movement was not in the opposite direction of actually abandoning the sick and the health, the unhealthy and the elderly, and that's what this proposal does.
Well, the idea was to amend it, not end it, right? And he's just tossing grenades at it. And this is going to have an effect here in New York State. What happens in Washington affects what happens in New York State. What are we worried about here in terms of the issues as we see them in the year ahead?
Well, we had already proposed that the public hospital system in New York is on the brink of collapse. And the idea was not so much of an exaggeration, because even in the growing deficit of $1.8 billion in total, right, from the state, now we have a proposed Congress healthcare law that would add to that by billions, right? If this congressional proposal is enacted, then we're looking at anywhere between $3 and $4 billion deficit for the 11 public hospitals and 70 ambulatory facilities that we're looking at. And we had a problem to begin with, and we had embarked with the mayor of the city of New York, who had done wonders in helping the public hospital system and had doubled. And we are all for that. But what we were saying is the state needs to do its part, too. I mean, we expect the federal government to do what they do, but the state in particular, who's getting large amounts of money from the feds, should do a part to try to fund the public hospital system so that it doesn't collapse. And essentially, what we're looking at, a complete defunding with a large looming deficit, very dilapidated systems who don't address the new reality in the healthcare industry, which requires people to be treated more at home than they are in an emergency room, and then a penalty system by the feds through Medicaid and a proposed privatization of literally hundreds of programs that would otherwise help the uninsured, the poor, and the elderly. And we are pushing very, very hard at the national level to align and identify new resources that we believe could happen and could be implemented at the state level in order to shore up and protect the public health system.
And here in New York State, we're pushing to extend the millionaire's tax. We only have a few minutes left. Could you tell us a little bit about what we're doing to fight for the millionaire's tax?
Yeah, we are. In fact, that's one of it. The millionaire's tax is scheduled to expire this year, and we believe that it should not just be extended, but it should be expanded for people who are making $10 million, $100 million a year. I think that, you know, it's only fair that at a time where the state is facing so many federal cuts, and we have so many millionaires here in New York, and when the top 1% is making about 50 times what the average, you know, 99% of the bottom 99% is making, I think it's only fair that they pay the fair share. We're pushing for a revenue package at the state level that does exactly that.
Henry Garrido is the executive director of District Council 37. Sir, we've got to have you on this show more often explaining how the world works because it's going to get tough out there.
From a union wars perspective, it's also good to have others with different ideas. We're very democratic, so I like to have the show continue the way it's gone, successful.
Thank you very much, sir. Talk to you soon.
Take care.
We'll be right back.
Were you a September 11th responder or volunteer? Were you present at the dust cloud on 9/11? Do you live, work, or go to school in the New York City disaster area on 9/11 or in the following months? Do you now suffer from problems such as chronic cough, shortness of breath, anxiety, depression, or have other symptoms? If so, you may be eligible for the World Trade Center Health Program and could receive medical monitoring and treatment at no out-of-pocket cost to you. To learn more about the program and get an application, go to www.cdc.gov/WTC or call 1-888-982-4748. If you were there, you deserve care. Call today. 1-888-982-4748. 1-888-982-4748. If you were there, you deserve care.
We're back. This is State of the Union, the District Council 37 radio show on 91.5 WNYE FM. We've been talking about the changes to health care with Henry Garrido, the executive director. Joining us now from Washington is Scott Fry. He is the director of federal government affairs with the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, AFSCME, which is DC 37's national union. Scott, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Chris. Appreciate it.
Washington seems like a tough place to be these days.
I would say the ancient Chinese curse, may you live in interesting times, is upon us.
Yeah. Well, interesting is an understatement. We were just talking with Henry about the Affordable Care Act and what some of the impacts can be on what has been proposed by the leadership in the House, Paul Ryan et al. And let's elaborate on that a little bit, about how specifically can New Yorkers be hurt by the changes that have been proposed?
Well, thanks, Chris. The state of New York tells us that under Affordable Care Act repeal, over 2.7 million New Yorkers could lose coverage. The estimated state budget impact and loss of Medicaid and other resources could be as much as $3.7 billion. Counties across New York could lose over $595 million in direct spending. Of course, what this means is that, you know, states are going to have to come up with those costs in other ways. It's going to affect the other types of programs like education and public health services and law enforcement and many other responsibilities of state government. So it's going to create a major budget crunch on the states and localities, as well as impact the health care of New Yorkers.
And this also has impacts on women and older workers, correct?
There's no question. For instance, it forbids any federal reimbursement for Planned Parenthood. You know, the many preventive health services that those clinics provide to women. It certainly changes age ratings so that older workers, and particularly, you know, which are predominantly older women in many cases, uh, would pay more for their insurance, maybe 2 to 3 times more than they currently pay. It basically takes insurance companies off the hook for some of the restraints that they were under the Affordable Care Act. And, of course, this has a disparate impact on women who are the largest consumers of health care.
Is this, in your mind, is this the opening salvo of a prolonged negotiation, or is this an expression, a clear expression of how the Republican majority in the federal legislature, how it views the world or how the world should be run?
Well, it's consistent with many of the other proposals we've seen. They want to gut the exchanges. They want to gut the guarantee of coverage. They want to place it with high deductible medical savings accounts where, beneficiaries are on the hook for the majority of their health care costs. It certainly reduces restrictions on the pharmaceutical industry to keep costs down.
Let's say that again. It reduces restrictions on pharmaceutical companies?
Well, let me just say this, that it provides a huge tax break to the industry, including many healthcare industries. Those who provide medical device corporations and drug companies, so it gives them a big break. And it takes them off the hook for a lot of the cost of this program.
The pharmaceutical companies are killing us now with the prices of prescription drugs, and we've just sort of given and this. Elections have consequences, right? These are the folks who won the election, and this is their view of the world.
They're ramming this bill through. There was no notice. They hid this bill in the Capitol for days. Nobody knew what was in it. They usually have hearings before they do a bill that affects a fourth of the economy. No hearings. They went straight to markup. They're trying to railroad this ideological change to our healthcare system through the process, with no amendments really being offered of any meaning in the committee. We'll see where it goes, but yes, this is a fast track, and it's fraught with problems.
Let's shift gears for a second, because this is part of. Again, getting back to this agenda, we are now. This is March. they've been in office for 2 months. They have proposed a national right to work law, which we all know is right. Or we have always described as right to work for less. And the agenda is going to be troublesome. Let's talk about this proposal for national right to work.
Yeah, well, thanks, Chris. The Congressman Steve King of Iowa, who is one of the most extreme members of the House Republican Caucus, has reintroduced a bill that would basically gut the National Labor Relations Board protections for workers and unions in the workplace. It basically takes the teeth out of the National Labor Relations Act, which protects the right to form and join unions. This bill in the past has been introduced, but this year there's particular concern. We feel there's a strong possibility that they may try to attach this to the must-pass appropriations bill that's got to be done on April 28th. This bill has passed or the government shuts down, so they're going to try to load it up with all sorts of terrible things. Of course, we're going to fight this in conjunction with our other brothers and sisters in the labor movement. But it's a serious threat this year. And with all the other attacks going on against working men and women and their collective bargaining rights around the country, this is a very serious threat. We're taking it very seriously.
And tell me what – you've been busy – and you will be busy. What is it that we should be doing as folks in the field to put pressure upon these folks who are proposing these laws?
Well, look, we're very excited about the reaction to this administration's agenda so far. I mean, we were able to shut down the Senate switchboard for 2 weeks when the public school voucher advocate Betsy DeVos was going through confirmation process. We need to keep that up. We need to keep calls and letters coming into our members of Congress's office. A lot of folks have been visiting their representatives' district offices, whether they hold town hall meetings or not. We have to show up at their events. We have to show up at their offices. We have to knock on their doors. We have to stay in touch with our unions and our organizations and make sure that we have the talking points. We're happy to help with that. There's a lot of good information on AFSCME's website about what's going on. We need folks to weigh in with their legislators. I know it sometimes seems like it doesn't make a difference, but it does.
The AFSCME website is www.afsme.org. The both AFSCME, A, F as in Frank, S as in Sam, C as in Cow, M as in Mary, E, is got a Facebook page. DC37's got the Facebook page and the website, which is www.dc37.net. There are more ways than ever to stay in touch with your union and to know what it is that you can do to get involved as these fights continue. Scott, so anything else that we should know about that's coming down the pike in terms of federal legislation that we should be thinking about?
Well, again, there are many things, and maybe too numerous. One is the nomination of the Supreme Court Justice Neil Gorsuch. We have very strong concerns about his record on labor rights and on civil rights, and so we're urging the senators to be asked very, very pointed questions about him, about his record. This is a very important case. As you know, the court is equally divided 4-4 right now in terms of left and right, and this would be the balance. And if he's as conservative as Justice Scalia, we feel that what hangs in the balance here, again, is the right to collective bargaining for public sector unions. That's a case that's going to come up in this. So it's very, very important that we make sure our senators very carefully scrutinize this nominee.
Yeah, and just so that the listeners understand this, there will be a case before the Supreme Court this year, I guess this year or possibly next, that will challenge the right to organize, the right to for public employees to come together as a union, and that threatens unions. And this is one of the things that just amazes me. The facts are clear. In the last 30 years, as union membership has declined, so has the quality of life for working people. And what the other side is saying right now is we want fewer unions, not more, and we're going to do everything we can to rig the deck against them. Scott Fry is the Director of Federal Government Affairs for the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, also known as AFSCME, DC-37's national union. Stay in touch with AFSCME and DC-37 on Facebook, on Twitter, and on the websites, AFSCME.org, DC37.net. Scott, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Chris. Always a pleasure.
We'll be back.
Do you have physical or mental health issues related to exposure to the 911 attacks? You may be eligible for the World Trade Center Health Program, which provides for medical treatment at no out-of-pocket cost. For more information, call 212-815-1685.
We're back. This is State of the Union, the District Council 37 radio show on 91.5 WNYE-FM. On Wednesday, March 22nd, 2017, at 6 p.m. at Union Headquarters, which is 125 Barclay Street, DC 37 is holding a Citizenship and Immigration Forum. There will be panelists from our Municipal Employees Legal Services. There will be representatives from the Mayor's Office of Immigrant Affairs, the New York Immigration Coalition. Joining us now is Cuthbert Dickinson, who is chair of the DC 37 Citizenship Committee. Cuthbert, welcome back to the show. You were on a couple of weeks ago. Why are we doing this?
Thanks for having me back. The reason for this forum is to encourage DC 37 members to become citizens and to educate the public at large of the immigration dilemma that would be facing us in a couple in the future. So we want to educate. We want to educate the public. You know, such thing as border security and deportation. We want to educate the public on their rights. Also about DACA and PAPA, you know, and just their basic rights. For example, you know, if they happen to be stopped, you know, you should not say nothing more than give your name and address. Do not give your country of birth or your country of citizenship or nationality, and do not lie.
This is coming out of... I am assuming that we are hearing a lot of worried folks coming out of the travel ban, coming out of the way that we're talking about immigration these days in the United States. Is that correct?
Oh yeah. The volume of complaint or concern have skyrocketed. And then so part of the concern is people just basically, you know, knowing their rights and asking questions. Well, you know, can this happen to me? Could I, you know, have my permanent or residency green card? Can I still be deported? And the answer to those questions is yes, based on the order that the president have put forth. So people, our members, need to be educated, and so it would be a travesty not to hold this forum.
Well,
and so. That's what we plan to do on the 22nd of this month at District Council 37, 125 Barclay Street.
We have many legal immigrants among our members, and they have been here, some for years, talking about, you know, the new New Yorkers, if you will. And that feeling has changed, or that sense of confidence has changed among members. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah. It has changed. It has changed tremendously. Tremendously.
Well,
it has changed.
And the union, the role of the union, as always, is to help educate and stand up for the members. That's why we're doing this Citizenship and Immigration Forum at DC 37, that's on Wednesday, March 22nd at 6 p.m., 125 Barclay, rooms 2 and 3. For more information, please call 212-815-7506. Yes, go ahead.
And just before we go, I just want to say that the role of the union is not only to educate its member, but also to facilitate our membership in becoming citizens. So it's just not education alone, but to help in the process of becoming a citizen.
Cuthbert Dickinson, chair of the DC 37 Citizenship Committee, thank you very much for joining us. That's about all the time we have. If there's anything that you have heard on this show that you'd like to respond to, it's stateoftheunion@dc37.net. Send us an email. And until next time, ciao.